evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 10, 2019. SPLM North's Yasir Arman is deported to Juba.
I came together with Comrade Ismail Khamis Gellab and Comrade Mubarak Ardul. So I was deported against my will. That is the only thing I can tell you now, and we can make later on an interview. I just want to confirm that I have been deported against my will.
And it's day two of a nationwide strike in Sudan.
But I could see many people queuing to try to withdraw money for their personal use. But still others are like complaining there is a lack of cash because the central bank of Sudan was also closed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The civil disobedience strike called by the Sudanese Professional Association entered its second day today. Sudan's Transitional Military Council also released three SPLM North officials, including Yasir Arman. All the three were immediately deported to South Sudan's capital, Juba. SPLM North Deputy Chairman Yasir Arman, who returned to Khartoum May 25th after more than 20 years living in Kenya, Sudan's Blue Nile State and the Nuba Mountains, was detained last Wednesday by Sudan's military council. On May 29, Arman told South Sudan in Focus in an exclusive interview that he returned to Khartoum to take part in the efforts to find a solution in the stalemate over who should lead the transitional government in Sudan. Today, Arman, who looks physically fit but exhausted, says he and his colleagues were forced into a military plane that took them to Juba.
I came together with Comrade Ismail Khamis Gellab and Comrade Mubarak Ardul. So I was deported against my will. That is the only thing I can tell you now, and we can make later on an interview. I just want to confirm that I have been deported against my will.
Arman had earlier defied an ultimatum by the Transitional Military Council to leave Sudan. The SPLM North split from the main SPLM in 2011 following South Sudan's independence and has been fighting the Khartoum government in Blue Nile and the Nuba Mountains. Arman says the people of Sudan are in his heart, even if he's in South Sudan.
The only thing that I'm pleased with, I have been always in my life regarded Sudan and South Sudan as one country. They have equal place in my heart and in my mind.
The deputy leader of the SPLM North declined to take questions but said he will speak to the media at a later time. Dimo Silva Aurelio prepared this report in Juba. Many people are staying at home in Sudan on the second day of a general strike called by the pro-democracy activists. Much of the capital, Khartoum, is quiet with long queues at ATM machines. Other people are staying at home out of fear after the military attacked demonstrators last week, killing an unknown number of people. The pro-democracy activists say 100 people were killed. Our reporter Mungu Ugali is in Khartoum and has been monitoring developments in the capital.
The second day today, many shopping centers and banks and public and private offices remain closed. Several newspapers have not been printed. And I have been today in Al Arabi Market in the downtown of Khartoum, and I could see few individuals seated in groups in front of closed shops. Some are like grouped around the tea places, chatting, and of course monitoring the situation. I have also observed few ATMs are open, but I could see many people queuing to try to withdraw money for their personal use. But still others are like complaining there is a lack of cash because the central bank of Sudan was also closed.
You told me that you've been to downtown Khartoum and you've seen shops closed and there are a few people gathered around just monitoring the situation. What about the pro-military militia, the paramilitary militia? Are they on the streets? And if they are on the streets, what are they telling people?
I have also observed the heavy presence of the military pickups packed with the soldiers in military uniform. And it is basically the uniform of rapid forces. and they are just on their pickup, either, you know, sitting near their pickup or either laying down near their pickup. They don't have anything to, like, they don't say anything to anybody. They don't talk to anybody. So anybody minds his or her own business. People just move around. But you could see the level of the security presence in the town even has increased significantly, as I said.
Yeah, and how about installations like Khartoum International Airport? Is it operational? We were hearing reports yesterday that some workers who did not turn up to their offices were arrested. Is Khartoum International Airport operating?
Khartoum International Airport yesterday did not operate, but today few flights were seen flying in and taking off and flying in at the airport. So today there are a few flights that have been observed landing and taking off from Khartoum International Airport. But yesterday there was no flight at all.
And how about the roadblocks that have been created by the pro-democracy protesters? Have you seen any roadblock on your way from your suburb to town and back?
Several roadblocks have been removed, but still, as you move, you could see still the remnants of the bricks, either poles, either whatever being put on the roadblock. You could see the side of the road. But I think people also contributed to, like, remove some of these roadblocks so that they can access the market, since they have been in the long holiday of Eid of Al-Fitr, and it has now added more 2 or 3 days of the weekend, plus the 2 days call for the civil disobedience. So it makes a little bit a longer holiday, which... for normal life, you might, you know, get frustrated with a sitting home, and even the basic food commodities that you might have stored for a few days that it might have been over. So people try to, you know, pick their vehicles, try to access the market, try to access the places where they can get something to eat.
And what about the leaders of the pro-democracy movement who have been protesting? Is there any statement from them on this latest development, apart from declaring a nationwide strike? What other statements have they been making?
They have given a lot of conditions going back to the talks with the military junta. And these conditions include, like they say, detainees who have been detained recently should be freed. And they also call for an independent investigation should be made for the incident. And they also call for more freedom for media and speech in the country.
That's our reporter Mungu Ugali speaking with me from Khartoum this past hour. From Sudan, we move to Zimbabwe, where economists are doubtful about a new plan by the Zimbabwe government to reintroduce a local currency this year. Adi Gondo has more for VOA from Harare.
Zimbabwe's government hopes a new local currency will help steady the economy, which is experiencing the worst inflation in a decade and growing shortages of basic goods. In February, the government introduced a new currency called RTG dollars, which is a blend of the electronic dollar and surrogate bond notes. The currency initially traded at 2.5 to the dollar in the interbank market, but it now trades at about 6 to the dollar officially. Most businesses now peg their prices in US dollars and use black market rates to calculate RTGS prices. Last week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa told a gathering that the current situation obtaining is not sustainable. The president says, as a country, we are obliged to have our own currency, and we've begun our journey because of the volatility of the currency market. But some economists say that although the Zimbabwean president is right in principle that a country should have its own currency, the fundamentals for introducing a new currency are not yet in place. Economist James Joa says the problem is to do with the country's production capacity.
First of all, our predicament as a country is not because of currency, but the situation turned bad when the government issued out treasury bills that amounted to significant amounts, to billions of dollars, I think more than 3 billion over the past 2.5 years. That led to high money supply growth, where we have too much money chasing too few goods because the country is not producing. So our problem is not a monetary problem. It is a production problem, a supply side issue.
Chua says no matter what currency is introduced, it will be undermined by lack of production as well as inflation. He thinks the government must first address what he terms the political risk factor, which he says causes investors to stay away from the country. Another economist, Tainos Kucherera, agrees on the need to create an environment that encourages business investment.
So bringing a new currency in this economic environment is not going to help anything. Because a currency must be backed up by a thriving industry. It must be backed up by a thriving economic investment, of which, in my view, these things are not yet in place. And until then, a new currency will just be as good as the bond notes that we've been printing and pushing to the public to use.
Economic analysts such as Dumisani Smanda say the other challenge for creating a workable currency is the government's tough tax system, which he says transfers wealth from the private sector and households to government. Smanda says the government needs to cut down on the bloated civil service and overall spending. He also thinks the government needs to initiate a consultative process before introducing a new currency.
So the way forward is a consultative process. It will take views from all economic stakeholders. Government cannot by itself impose on citizens that they must introduce a local currency. It must be consensual and properly structured strategy on how to introduce a local currency. The fundamentals that must be in place to support it. Currently, they're just doing it against the will of many economic players and without a proper strategy that supports a way of productivity improvement and, everything that is required to have a viable currency.
Economists argue that policy ineptitude and inconsistency has prevented an economic turnaround for Zimbabwe. They also cite endemic corruption and unbridled government expenditure as drags on the economy. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at the role of men in empowering women in leadership roles. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what infrastructure does your local and national government invest in?
Investment in local infrastructure here in my country is mainly roads, hospitals, schools, and other infrastructure that caters for some social needs.
Honestly, we have a lot that the country has to invest in, but I keep seeing the country prioritizing so much in security, in tear gas.
Maternal health care and basic education for the children, and well, for now, that's what I can say.
The government is investing much into load, that is transport. Maybe some schools are coming up and some renovation of hospitals. That's what I can say.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new initiative by a Colorado-based nonprofit called Secure Future is focusing on the role of women in leadership around the world. The model is being backed by a U.S. lawmaker who is urging other policymakers to create laws that will encourage more female participation. U.S. Congressman Ed Royce, a Republican from California, shared a message for world leaders and men who do not see the value of women in nationwide peace process.
Compare those societies that respect women and those that don't. If you think about societies that empower women and protect women in vulnerable situations, those societies are far less likely to be trafficking in people or drugs or weapons. They don't tend to send off huge amounts of refugees across borders or oceans. They don't transmit pandemics. They don't harbor terrorists or pirates, and frankly, they don't require American troops on the ground. Don't tell me that there is no relationship between national security and empowerment of women. There's a one-to-one correspondence.
Speaking at a recent U.S. Initiative of Peace event, Roy said the best plans that are designed for women are the ones designed by women. And there is a research to back up his calls for more women inclusion. The Council on Foreign Relations says that a peace process is 64% less likely to fail and 35% more likely to last if women help shape the agreement. Despite the research, only two women in history have served as chief negotiators in a peace accord. And USIP says very few women are part of a formal peace process 20 years after the passing of a UN Resolution 1325 on women, peace and security. Roy said he believes that women can tip the scale of justice towards more peaceful world, but in order to do this, men must be involved in women's empowerment.
Most men have a rough sense of justice in them. Tell them that you would end the impunity of warlords like President Charles Taylor, who used boys as child soldiers and girls as chattel, and ask men to help end that kind of impunity. Tell them how women in civil society in Liberia were critical in keeping the peace process on track after Taylor was hauled before the International Criminal Court in The Hague to face justice. Justice for organizing tens of thousands of rapes and killings and amputations. Explain to men that the warlord was then replaced by the election of a woman president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who kept the peace and served as a role model to women. Tell them that if concerned men can make that kind of change happen in Liberia, men can help women quell anarchy and mayhem anywhere.
The U.S.-based nonprofit Our Secure Futures new initiative is working to mobilize men in the fight for gender parity in peaceful deal. It urges male gatekeepers to use their positions of influence in diplomacy, civil society, businesses, defense, and other official parameters to open more doors for women. Roy says the inclusion of women is not just good policy, it is good for global security.
There are 5,000 years of recorded history where men are making decisions without the input of women as co-equal partners. And something keeps being left out of the documents, like the right to vote, inherit property from mom, things like that.
Royce adds that including women can change social norms across the world that have traditionally prevented women from taking leading roles in patriarchal societies. This report was prepared by Ayen Deng Bior here in Washington. Supporters of press freedom in Malawi are denouncing a government order suspending all radio and television call-in programs. Malawi's Communication Regulatory Authority issued the order on Friday, saying it is concerned that the programs could trigger more post-election violence. Lamek Masina has more from Blantyre.
2 minutes past 11 o'clock, and getting a comment here from Chicken Bean Yagwawa. You're saying, morning, guys, there's a lot of beneficial...
A host on Malawi's privately owned capital radio station reads text messages from listeners on her show. The station is known for broadcasting lively chat shows about politics and society, but has been forced to engage with listeners via social media. On Friday, Malawi's Communications Regulatory Authority, MACRA, ordered all broadcasters to immediately and indefinitely suspend call-in shows. Capital Radio's director, Audine Osman, says the suspension has dealt a blow to their normal programming.
We are quite angry and disappointed about this. In fact, our immediate reaction was to send MACRA a strong message that this isn't fair, because most of our programs on Capital Radio are talk programs. Now, the blanket ban affects all of us.
MACRA said some broadcasters had engaged in a careless and unethical coverage of unrest that followed the disputed May elections, and expressed concern the chat shows could inflame further violence. Last week, Malawi opposition supporters, angry about the re-election of President Peter Mutharika, clashed with the police, who used tear gas to break up the protests. Two opposition leaders launched a legal challenge against the results, claiming Mutharika's ruling Democratic Progressive Party and the Election Commission rigged the vote. The DPP and the Election Commission have denied the accusations and say the election was free and fair. Osman says that suspending the chat shows suggests there is panic in the ruling party.
That they don't want anybody to discuss the aftermath of the election. It seems somebody somewhere seems to be afraid of public opinion.
When asked by a reporter Monday by phone why the ban was needed, MACRA's communications manager Clara Mafulilwa said she would come back later, and then promptly ended the call. Malawi Press Freedom Group Media Institute for Southern Africa says the government's order violates freedom of expression. Teresa Ndanga is the chairperson for the group.
We have asked them to reverse that decision, and we do expect that they would respond in the best interest of Malawians. We'll see thereafter what action we might take depending on the outcome of the engagement that we are having.
Broadcast managers are planning to meet with the Communications Regulatory Authority this week to discuss the matter. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
From Malawi, we move down to Cameroon. Cameroon has detained hundreds of more supporters of opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who is facing treason charges after leading protests and asserting that he won last October's presidential election. The arrest happened Saturday as security forces disrupted a planned demonstration calling for Kamto's release. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Book seller Germaine Kamté was found lying on the ground Monday in the Lonkak neighborhood of Cameroon's capital with bruises all over her body. She told the crowd that found her it was police who stopped her and her four friends, accused them of supporting a planned opposition protest, and then beat them. She says the police beat her and four others severely, saying they were rude because two of the girls pleaded to be allowed to speak with their lawyers. Police kicked them all over their bodies, says Kamté, and used batons to beat them on their heads and under their feet. Cameroon police refused to respond to Kamté's accusations, but routinely deny use of excessive force. Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji said the police were deployed to maintain public order. He said the planned protest by supporters of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party was illegal and its arrested leader, Maurice Kamto, a threat to stability.
We can no longer tolerate those who undermine the laws of the Republic. He has a hidden agenda to destabilize Cameroon. We'll not give him the opportunity.
Kamto's supporters had promised to defy yet another ban on protest Saturday and demonstrate for his immediate release, along with over 500 arrested and detained supporters. But Cameroon's security forces disrupted the protest and detained about 200 more opposition supporters, says the CRM party. CRM Secretary General Christopher Ndong condemned authorities for deploying troops to crack down and refusing their right to protest.
We have taken the pains to write declaring that we want to protest. For more than 300 subdivisional offices, systematically the government has rejected it. We now use the constitutional right, because it's in the constitution that we have to write and march and protest for things that are going wrong.
Human rights activist Jean-Pierre Bengona says Cameroon should not be using the military to stop protests.
Moi, je ne suis pas fondamentalement d'accord qu'on trouve manifestement des gendarmes qui certainement ont mieux à
faire. He says no normal human being would be happy seeing the military of a country that is supposed to protect its people assemble every morning, ready to arrest those who simply want to express their opinions. He says all organized democracies need the opposition to check political excesses and discuss the well-being of its people. Kamto declared himself winner of the October 7, 2018 presidential election and accused the president of Cameroon, Paul Biya, who has led for 36 years, of stealing his victory. Biya was declared the winner with 71% of the vote, far ahead of Kamto's 14%. Police arrested Kamto and his colleagues in January after days of peaceful protest turned violent, with security forces using riot gear to disperse crowds in Yaoundé, Douala and Buda. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. On day two of Sudan's nationwide strike called by the Sudanese Professional Association, the Transitional Military Council freed SPLM North Deputy Chairman Yasser Arman and two other SPLM North officials. They all were taken by military plane to Juba. Arman, who returned to Khartoum May 25th after more than 20 years of living either in Kenya, Sudan's Blue Nile State, and the Nuba Mountains area, he was detained last Wednesday. On May 29th, Arman told South Sudan in Focus that he returned to the capital to take part in efforts to find a solution in the stalemate over who should lead the next government. Looking unharmed but exhausted, Arman said that the Sudanese military officials forced him and his colleagues into the plane that dropped them in Juba. Arman said the people of Sudan are in his heart, even if he is in South Sudan. Many people are staying indoors across Sudan today during the strike. Much of Khartoum is quiet. The only noticeable groups of people, according to our reporter there, are those in line waiting to use ATM machines and various tea places. Shopping stores, banks, including the central bank, and public and private offices remain closed. Several newspapers have not been published. There is also a heavy presence of Sudanese soldiers on the streets of Khartoum. The international airport did not open yesterday, but there are a few arrivals and departures today. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Vendon.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Kelele by Hardlife Avenue Stars. We've been listening to Hardlife Avenues with the song Kelele. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Luana.